Recording. Yes.
We're beginning Masechta Gittin today on page Aleph of it in Ein Yaakov, Ois Aleph. So Masechta Gittin, I don't think needs much introduction. It talks about the dinim of Gittin and a variety of other dinim involving shtaros as well. And then in the middle of it talks about other topics. So the beginning of it, the Masechta begins by talking about the case of Hamevi Get Medina Sayam. A person brings a get from a country outside Eretz Yisrael, then he has to be able to say B'fanei Nichtav or B'fanei Nechtam, and the Gemara spends several blat discussing the ins and outs of those dinim. There's a sicha in Chelek Ches, I think, or Chelek Tes, where the Rebbe talks about Chelek Tes, I think, where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind it, where the idea of get reflects the we have a marriage with the Eibishter, and there seems to be on the surface a get between us and the fact that we're sent off into Golos, but nevertheless, in truth, even though we're in Medinas Hayam with everything that that represents, nevertheless, we're saying b'fanei nechta, and the Eibishter is actually always there with us, and the shliach, which is to say the goyim and everyone who harass us, have to really admit deep down that they're only a shliach of the Eibishter who is everywhere, and therefore there's no get at all. In any case, so the Gemara, as I said, spends a few dafim discussing the ins and outs of those dinim. So in this connection, the Gemara brings Shalach le Rabbi Yosser, le Rav Chista. Rabbi Yosser said, who was in Eretz Yisrael, sent a message to Rav Chista, who was in Bavel, saying, Gittin aboim mishom lekan, Gittin that are brought from there, from Bavel to here, to Eretz Yisrael, ain tzorach lama b'fanei nechtam, you don't have to declare b'fanei nechtam, even though Bavel is chutz la'aretz. The Gemara had a whole sugya before that explaining that in this regard, Bavel is like Eretz Yisrael as far as Gittin, because the various reasons that apply to the rest of Chutz La'aretz, that people are not Baki, doesn't apply in Bavel. You have the great Taman Chachamim over there, and the fact that Ein Edim Mitzurin L'Kaimer, that people don't travel that much back and forth between them. They do constantly travel between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you don't need it. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Man Lemalanda, Rabbi Yosef Bar Samchu. Who says this Rabbi Yosef is reliable? Who says, just because he said such a din, that we should be able to rely on him and Paskin Halacha like him? Daha Shalach, because after all, we see that he sent the following message, and we can see that he did something wrong in sending it, or the Girsa in the printed Gemara is Va'oid, and furthermore, Ha'ir de Shalach, he's the one who sent the following message. So according to the Ein Yaakov's Girsa, that's in parenthesis, it means it's all one thing. Rabbi Yosef is saying, I hold, we can't rely on him because he did wrong in the following thing. According to the printed Gemara, it's rather two different things. He's saying, first of all, who says he's reliable? And second of all, I can actually demonstrate that he did wrong in the following thing. He sent a message, Shalach le'Rav Yehuda. He sent a message to Rav Yehuda, also in Bavel. B'nei Adam ha'olam misham lekan. People who go up from there, from Bavel, to here, to Eretz Yisrael, people would go all the time, especially to learn Torah, and they would spend a long time there. Ion Yaakov points out, we learned in Ksubas, that Rabbi Yehuda in particular holds that you're not even allowed to leave Bavel for Eretz Yisrael, therefore Rabbi Yosser sent him particularly this message. We often find, the Tosfos even points out in some places in Shas, that we find that Rabbi Yochanan's Talmidim on the whole, Rabbi Yochanan, who was in Eretz Yisrael, his Talmidim on the whole were from Bavel, and vice versa, the Talmidim of the Amoraim in Bavel, such as Rav Huna, were often from Eretz Yisrael. So people would do that, they would dafka go far from home in order to learn Torah for a while undisturbed. But Rabbi Yosef criticizes that, and he says, Heim kiyum v'atzman, these people are being Mekayim with themselves, the following Pasuk. They give away a child for a zoina, a boy for a zoina, and a girl, mochru bayayin, they sell for wine, vayishtu, and they drink. Now, in context, the Pasuk is talking about the various goyim who kidnap Jews to sell them as slaves or things like that. So you'd have even, they think so little of Jewish children, that they would, even if they had a Jewish boy, a captive, they're not even looking to get an expensive price for him. They'd be satisfied if they just get enough money to be able to go to a zoina, and similarly for a girl, just to be able to get some wine to drink. How does that apply to these? And the Navi goes on to say that Hashem is going to severely punish those goyim for treating the Jews in such a way. Anyway, but here Rabbi Yosser is taking the pasuk in a different sense. Rashi explains, obviously now these people are the people, the Talmid Chacham, who are coming from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, are not doing that. But the fact that they stay away for so long, and therefore they're not doing Piri, it shows that they also consider the whole matter of having children to be an unimportant thing. So therefore, in a dacostic way, therefore Rabbi Yosser is criticizing them. They're acting in the way that these goyim described in the pasuk do, where they think that having Jewish children and raising them is not important. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos gives a couple of other explanations. Number one is that because the father is away learning Torah, therefore the children have to go to work young in order to support themselves. So therefore, bazoina, he's using the word bazoina, not in the sense of a zoina as in the context of the pasuk, but rather meloshen mizoinus. Like they have to go and sell themselves. They have to go and sell the children, have to go and sell themselves by yona and by yayin, bazoina and by yayin, in order to have just enough for basic food and wine. Then Tosfos brings another explanation that there was actually an example of somebody who was so short of money, but he wanted so badly to learn Torah that he sold his daughter as an Amor Hevriya and went off to learn Torah. The halacha is, in fact, a father is not even allowed to sell his daughter as an Amor Hevriya unless he's completely penniless. So in this case, apparently this guy was so penniless that the only way for him to raise money to go learn Torah was to sell his daughter as an Amor Hevriya. So again, Rabbi Yosser is criticizing that. There are other explanations as well. The Rif over here brings an explanation that when the fathers are not at home, therefore they're not able to they're not able to protect and keep watch over their children. So the goyim may well kidnap them and literally sell them bazono vayayin, as the pasuk is saying, and the fathers are not around to prevent it. So however we learn it, the point is that Rabbi Yosef is criticizing them. And the problem is, now he quoted this pasuk, v'kosev lei b'loi sirtut. Now he wrote that pasuk in his, that half a pasuk in his letter, without sirtut, without drawing lines on the paper first to make that the writing should be straight, like you have in a Sefer Torah and in Tefillin and Mezuzahs. And Rabbi Yitzchak said, you can't do that. Shtayim kosvin, you can write two words of a pasuk without sirtut, shalosh ein kosvin. But once you're writing three, then you need sirtut. And here he quoted more than three. He quoted more than three words. So we'll talk about it in a second. But masnisatana in a braisa, we learn differently. Shalosh kosvin, arba ein kosvin. You're allowed to write three words. You're not allowed to write four. A number of them, Mephoshim, deal with over here the question how Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yon Yaakov discusses it at some length. For one, that Rabbi Yitzchak is an Amora, how is he able to argue with a Braisa? And he also discusses how the Rambam seems to contradict himself on this, because in one place he says you're allowed to write three words without sirtut, but not more. But then in another place he says you can't write three words without sirtut. And he goes into a long arichus over here about the various possibilities, one of them being maybe there's a difference in this regard between psukim of Chumash and psukim from Nach. Maybe psukim from Chumash, you can write maximum two words without sirtut, but here the pasuk is quoting us from Yoyo, which is one of the Tereyoser, which is a Nach, so therefore he'd be allowed three. Be that as it may, the point is he wrote much more than three words without sirtut. Now, yes, nowadays we don't often do that. So there's a number of things that the posts can discuss in this regard. First of all, it may only apply if you're quoting the posik in order to darshan it or something like he's doing. Sometimes you have people will quote words from a posik for tzachus haloshen. You'll have like, it used to be very much more common that people would use pieces of psukim, words and phrases from psukim to beautify their language, they'd be writing a letter or something in Lashon Kodesh, and they would use it in order to beautify and make the language fancy. You find that, for example, in some of the letters of the Alter Rebbe that you find in Tanya, for example, are like that. He'll take a word or a phrase from a pasuk and embed it into a sentence that he's writing over there in order to make the sentence sound nicer. It's called tzachos haloshen. So for that, the posts can say maybe you're allowed to write more words than that, and then they talk about different other possibilities. Maybe as long as the whole reason why you have to have sirtut is the lines shouldn't be crooked. It wouldn't be bekavadik for the words of Torah. But if the top line is straight, then maybe there's less of an issue of it. Also, for example, they talk about that there may not be an issue if you're writing just in regular handwriting like we do. It may only be an issue in ksavashuri. And there's a number of different things that the post can point out. With that said, it does also mention in this connection in Shulchan Aruch that Divrei Chol are really not supposed to be written in Ksav Ashuri. Sometimes you have on wedding invitations and things, people have Sefer Torah letters and they put Psukim over there, and it's such a thing is actually questionable, la halacha.
For sure not,
but even without the Tagim, whether it's allowed, yeah. After the Tagim, after all, are not ma'akiv. Sefer Torah is in principle kosher without Tagim. Anyway, there are various halachas that are discussed in that connection. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yosef is saying, again, look at this. Rabbi Yosef wrote this letter. He didn't do the sirtut over here for this pasuk. So how can we trust that he knows what he's talking about as far as this matter of the gittin?
Omale Abaya, Abaya answers back, Rabbi Yosef, Otu kol de lo yada hod Rabbi Yitzchok lav gaver Rabbahu. What do you think? Anybody, are you going to say that anybody who doesn't know the statement of Rabbi Yitzchok is not a great person, is not a great Talmud Chacham? Bishlema milsa de talya besvara. When it's something that depends on svara, then l'chaye, then fine. A Talmud Chacham should be expected to come up with svaras to realize something that's part of a svara in Torah. He should be able to come up with that svara independently. So if he doesn't, then maybe it means he's not applying himself to his learning properly. The fact is, this is not a svara dika thing. This is a statement, the Kabbalah, that we have from Rabbi Yitzchak or from the Braisa. But go Gemara lo shmiyale. So Rabbi Yosef hasn't heard of that statement. That doesn't make him not a Talmud Chacham. A Talmud Chacham can't be expected to know everything in Torah that's been taught out there. V'oid, furthermore, says Abaya, you want to know what Rabbi Yosef is. You should know that Rabbi Yosef, his master, Hashem, no less, agreed with him, and agreed, meaning Hashem, made it possible for him to discover something that would have otherwise been completely unknown. Namely, Dichtiv. So you have a pasuk in connection with Pilegesh Begiva. So the story of Pilegesh Begiva, in a nutshell, is you have a Levi living in Har Ephraim in Eretz Yisrael. He has a Pilegesh from Beis Lechem in Yehuda. She's Mizana. We'll talk about in a second what that means. And she leaves and goes home to Beis Lechem. He goes, he follows her there. To make a very long story short, on the way back, they stop in the city of Giva in Binyamin, and in the territory of Shevet Binyamin. Nobody wants to be Machnas Oirach except for one old guy over there. And then as they're in the house, a mob comes outside the door, knocking on the door and demanding that they should send out this guy from Mishkav Zachar, and instead he sends out his Pelegesh. They abused her all night, and then in the morning she passed away from the way she had been mistreated. And then afterwards, the Levi starts a whole outrage about this. It's outrageous that the Jews should act this way. He informs the whole Jewish people, and they all gather to go to war against Shevet Binyamin. In the course of the war, the 400,000 Jews from the other Shevatim gathered together, against Shevet Binyamin at that time had 26,000 and some men of war. In the battles the next couple of days, 40,000 of the other Shvatim were killed, and then on the third day, almost the entire Shevet Binyamin was wiped out. And then afterwards, there were no women left from Shevet Binyamin, and they had to make special efforts to get wives for the survivors. The story takes up the last three parakim of Sefer Shoftim. Anyway. So the Pasuk says, Vatizna olav pilagshay. The Pasuk says that his pilagish was mizana on him. Now, by the way, also, so you have a couple of the Meforshim deal with the question. The Malbim deals with it on Parshas, the Ramban deals with it on Parshas Vayera in connection with the story of Sdoim. The Malbim deals with it on these Pesukim in Parshas in Sefer Shoftim. On the face of it, the story sounds a lot like what happened with the Malochim and Loit in Sdoim. How is it that Sdoim, Hashem, sent down Gofris Va'esh, fire and sulfur on them, and destroyed them, and Giva not? So the Ramban discusses there are a number of differences, one of them being in Sdoim, the law was that you can't have guests, whereas in Giva there was no such thing. It was Stam, some wild people who had Taivas. By Sdoim it says Kol Ha'am, by Giva it doesn't. And a number of other things. Ultimately, he points out, we see that the other Shvatim were outraged and went to war against them. The Malbim points out more distinctions also. You see, when this guy and his Pilegesh and his servant and everyone come to the city of Giv over there, they don't have to sneak into the guy's house. The guy doesn't have to take them in a roundabout way, like Loit did with the Malachim. It's just they're sitting out there in the street, and nobody's taking them in until this guy comes and then is Machnas Ordach. But it's not like he has to be afraid of the people, because again, like the Ramban said, there's no laws against it. The people are even, he says, the word misdap, the Pasuk says in the word, the Pasuk uses the expression misdapkim, which literally means like they're making to knock. So he explains, it's not like they're about to break down the door like it was by Loit and Sturm. They're knocking and demanding because of their tivus, but not because they seriously plan to go and break into the house and kidnap the guy, etc. So the point is there are a number of differences. And even so, though, the rest of the Jewish people were outraged and went to war about it. Anyway, so the Pasuk begins the whole story by saying, Vatizna olav pilagshoy. His pilagish was mizana on him. Now, the Ramban on those psukim actually learns it straight out that she was in fact mezana, and he says that's one reason why Shevet Binyamin in the psukim over there. Why, when the other shvatim tell them what's going on with you, how could these people in Giva have done such a thing? Hand them over, we're going to kill them. Shevet Binyamin basically said, mix out of it. It's not your business because they're not chayiv nis. So look, this woman was a zoyna in the first place. Nevertheless, though, the Gemara doesn't want to accept that, and Mefoshim talk a number of reasons why not. One of them for Tosfos brings that, first of all, the very fact that we see that he went to Beis Lechem to get her back shows she wasn't actually Mizana. Otherwise, she'd be also to him. And even if not also, at least why would he want to take her back? And then a number of other points as well. The very fact that everybody else went to war about this shows that she wasn't a Zoyna. The fact that the fact that he went to go and win her back rather than the other way around. If she had actually been Mizana, then she should be the one coming to him, etc. So there's a number of reasons that the Gemara wants to assume that it wasn't literal znus. So in that case, the Shurdish Zona literally means to go out. The Zona is called that. She goes out from where she's supposed to. And Vatizna, all the Palag, she just means that she went out and left him. So why did she leave him? What happened? Rabbi Yosef almost zvuv matzala. So Rabbi Yosef says that he found a fly in the food that she served him. And therefore, as we're going to go on to say, he got angry at her and therefore she ran away. Tosfos points out in that case, also the Loshen Vatizna, just like we said before about Vayitna Yelad Bazoina, that Zoina can be Maloshen Mazon, the same way over here. Vatizna Ola Pilag, she means that something went wrong as far as the food that she served him. So that's Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yonasan Amar Nima Matzala. Rabbi Yonasan says he found a hair. Now, where did he find the hair? But we'll see soon. Now, Va'ashkechei Rabbi Yosef L'Eliyahu. Now, one day, Rabbi Yosef met up with a Yohan Navi. Omalei asked him, "My Ka'ovid Kudsha Brichu, what is Hashem currently doing?" Omalei, and Eliyahu tells him, "Osik B'Pilegesh B'Giva." Currently, Hashem is learning and reviewing the story of Pilegesh B'Giva. My Kama, so Rabbi Yosef asks, so what is Hashem saying on this? Rabbi Yonasan and I are arguing what triggered her running away and therefore led to this whole sad story. So which one was it? Amalei, so the answer is Hashem is saying both opinions. Ev Yosef bni kachu oimer, Yonasan bni kachu oimer. He's mentioning both. He's saying my son of Yosef says that it was such and such, and my son Yonasan says such and such. Omalei, Rabbi Yosef says to Eliyahu, Chas v'Shalom, Umi'ika Sveika Kamishmaya. How could there be a suffix in front of Hashem? Hashem knows the actual truth. What happened? What do you mean? Hashem is saying, Rabbi Yosef says this, Rabbi Yonasan says that, as though he doesn't know. Omalei, Sir Eliyahu answers him with a famous expression, Eilav Eilav Divrei Elokim Chayim. Both of them are, in fact, the words of Hashem. They are both true. Zvuv Motzav Lei Hikbid. First, he found a fly, but he didn't mind that. He didn't get angry with her over that. Nima Matzah, later on, he found a hair in the food, the hikbid, and then he was makbid. Because, in other words, one time you have a fly. Listen, you know, the same way we have a saramashkin with paro, a fly can fall in there and you can't really help it. But once he sees that there's a hair in there as well, later on, then he sees she's being careless. She's not taking trouble to keep his food clean. So therefore, he got angry at her. So both of them are true. Both of them led up to it. And the idea is, but part of the point is, Mefoshim explained, had it not been for the fly earlier, then he wouldn't necessarily have gotten so angry at the hair either. So he let the fly slide, but nevertheless, he remembered it. Now, you know, this is why you have the Rambam mentions in Hilchos Deis, you know, we just had yesterday or 2 days ago in Rambam, this part of Hilchos Deis, about you're not allowed to be noikim and you're not allowed to be noiter either, no noiter, to bear a grudge. Here you see an example. This guy didn't forget about the zvuv, he just bore a grudge about it, and then later on, when the nima came out, then he exploded about it, and then she ran away out of fear of him. The point now, a number of the Mefoshim point out, so what's so great about what Rabbi Yosef said? He says the fly, but the fact is that the fly is not what caused the whole thing, but that's the vote. One point is, people knew about the hair, because once she left, everybody in the town was talking why she left, and they talked about the matter of the hair. Nobody realized that, no, not many people realized that that there was a fly before that, which had predisposed him to be angry at her. Rabbi Yosef, now, Hashem told Rabbi Yosef that secret. Hashem gave him the Ruach HaKodesh to recognize that. Therefore, says Abaye, you can see from that Rabbi Yosef was a really great Talmid Chacham, the fact that Hashem gave him such a secret, which most people couldn't possibly have known. By the way, there's a vote on this from the Bnei Yisoscha in a Sefer Agra the Pirka that says you now. Why didn't Abaye say, "Look how great Rabbi Yosef is"? Eliyahu never appeared to him. The answer is we see from this that to be able to come up with a truth in Torah is even greater than Gilui Eliyahu. And there's a and there an idea behind an idea that's brought why that is, because Gilui Eliyahu is a greatness for oneself. On the other hand, to come up with a truth of Torah that now you're able to teach other people is something that helps other people, and therefore that's a much greater milah. Anyway, so again, so that's one way of understanding what happened over here. Rabbi Yehuda learns a little differently. Here we were saying that that both the fly and the hare were in the food, but Rabbi Yehuda learns differently. Zvuv b'ka'ara. Yes, the fly was in the food. The nima ba'osim makim, but the hare was not in the food, but rather in osim makim, and he found it when they were having relations. Tosfos actually points out that elsewhere the Gemara says that Benos Yisrael in those days, that Jewish women generally didn't have hair by their erva, at least not enough to be a problem. Tosfos points out that this girl, this Pilegesh, may have actually been a daughter of Yifas Toyar, and therefore she has Goyish genetics, she has Goyish genes in her, and then they had hair. In any case, the point is zvuv me'isusa. So to find a fly in the food is disgusting, but fine. He was bothered by it, but he didn't get angry at her about it. The nima, but to find a hare in oisimakam sakanta, that's a danger because the hare could injure him while they're having relations. Ben Yehoyada even says sometimes what you would have is he says that. Unmarried women, women who were not yet married or were divorced or widowed or away from their husband for a period of time, would apply some kind of treatment to the hair over there to make it very stiff and spiky, so that if anybody tries to force himself on her, he'll be injured. And he or she forgot to take that stuff off, or some of it off, before he and her got back together, and therefore that he minded. So they said that, and that's a sakana. So therefore that bothered him. Ikadamri, Aidi Vaidi Bakara. Others say both of them is in the food. Zvuv Onsa, again, that a fly should fall in is an oinus. Vinima Pshiosa, but that there should be hair in the food is Pshia, and therefore he got angry at her for that. Which again, the fact is, you still have to say that he did remember about the fly beforehand as well. It wasn't only because of the hair, because otherwise you can't say Eilav Eilav Divrei Elokim Chaim. So it means both of them contributed to cause this whole story to happen. And again, the point is, that most people couldn't possibly have known about the fly, but only he and she, really. So therefore, that Rabbi Yosef knew that the Ebishta gave him Ruach HaKodesh to realize that, says Abaye, shows that he's a great person. The Gemara continues on this topic then. So what are we saying? Ultimately, what happened was this Levi got angry at her, and therefore Vatizna all the Pelagisha. Therefore, she ran away to her father's house, and therefore he followed her there to get her back, and therefore everything had happened. If she hadn't run away in the first place, they never would have been in Giva, and the whole story never would have taken place, and hundreds and tens of thousands of Jews wouldn't have been killed. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chista, lo'olam al yatil odam eime yiseder b'seif beisei. A person should never put too much fear into his household. Sometimes you have, the Rama mentions again in Hilchos Deis that sometimes a person has to pretend to be angry when in his household when something bad has been done, but he should never actually get so angry at them that now they're fearful of him all the time. You see that her husband, this Levi, put on her too much fear, and the result is she ran away, and the result is the whole story developed from there. And because of this whole story with her, tens of thousands of Jews were killed. And the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rab, Kol ha-matil eime yiseira b'seich beisei, anybody who puts too much fear in his household, soif hu bali de sholosh averus. The end is going to come up to three averus, three major averus: gilui arayus, ushvichus damim, v'chilul Shabbos. So gilui arayus, Rashi explains what may happen is, for example, it's time for her to tovel. Now back then they didn't have heated mikvahs. Back then you tovled either in a natural river or spring or lake or what have you, or they had mikvahs carved into the ground, but they didn't have any technology to heat them. You have a rare thing by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. It says they would put iron bars in there, they'd put heated iron bars in there to warm up the water, but ordinarily you'd have to tovel in there cold or not. A few hundred years ago the poskim started coming up with methods of heating the water, although they didn't work very well. The Alter Rebbe came up with a method of putting a putting a box inside the mikveh that's made in such a way that the mikveh is still kosher, but you're able to fill it with hot water. It's brought the Alter Rebbe considered that one of his 10 schusim that he invented this concept. Anyway, so the point is, Rashi says, so if it's cold, she has to tovel anyway. Now, if her husband is causing Eima Yaseira, then when it comes, he's going to ask her, did you tovel? And she's going to lie and say, I did, when she actually didn't because of the cold. And then they're going to end up having relations when she's a nidda. Then Yehoyada points out another point as well. You know, you can have, for example, that you may have somebody comes and blackmails her. You may have a noyif comes and blackmails her. You either have relations with me, or I'm going to tell your husband. And if you don't, I'm going to tell your husband you did anyway. So now, again, if the husband is matal Eima Yaseira, the problem is she's going to figure she's stuck between a rock and a hard place. Like this, if she gets along well with her husband, she can tell him what's going on. This guy's blackmailing me, and then when he comes and tells you, you'll know to distrust what he says. But if there's Eima Yaseira, then she's going to be afraid to do that. And of course, in addition, you also have in this particular story of Pelegish Begiva, there was Gilead Arias, because she herself suffered that all night. So that's that. Ushvichos damim, bloodshed. So first of all, again, you have the story of Pelegish Begiva itself, where tens of thousands of Jews were killed. Also, Rashi explains she may be so afraid of her husband that she runs away and she falls into a hole, or she falls off a bridge or something like that and ends up getting killed. And the third one, v'chilul Shabbos, and then chilul Shabbos, because for example, again, she might not have lit Shabbos candles or finished cooking the food or whatever before Shabbos comes in, and because she has Eima Yaseira of him, therefore she's going to go and be mechallel Shabbos rather than risking that he's going to get angry at her. Tosfos brings another point as well. The day of Pelegish Begiva was Shabbos. Now, what does that mean? Marsha says, do we mean that the actual night that they were there in Giva was Shabbos, Friday night? In that case, what specific Chilul Shabbos is over there? I mean, it was a terrible thing, but we don't specifically find any Chilul Shabbos in that story. So Marsha says, what we mean is the day when they went to battle, when they went to war against Bnei Binyamin, was on Shabbos. Now, they figured they should. It's a Mechamas Mitzvah. But nonetheless, it was still, it wasn't really. The Gemara actually talks about elsewhere. They didn't ask Hashem properly for permission before they went to war. And the psukim there in Sefer Shoftim, you find the first 2 days, they lost very badly to Shevet Binyamin. The first day, 22,000 Jews from the other Shevatim are killed. Another day, 18,000. And it turns out, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, they didn't ask the Urim B'Tumim properly whether we're going to go to war and whether they're going to win. They assumed we have to go to war, and they're just asking which Shevet should go first or things like that. So it wasn't really a Mochamas Mitzvah, and they had no business fighting it on Shabbos. I mean, there is also, there is also, of course, the fact is they did end up killing the Pelegish with the way they treated her. And in that sense, also, Yon Yaakov says, well, then there's Chilul Shabbos as well. The fact is they didn't mean to kill her, but nonetheless they did. And that's obviously a malacha of Shabbos. Anyway, so the point is, all of this we're saying was all brought about by the Eima Yaseira, by the fact that this Levi made her too afraid of him. So the Gemara continues in this regard. Now we have a Mishnah in Masech to Shabbos that says, Shloisha Dvarim Tzorech Odom Loimer Besech Beise Erev Shabbos in Chashecha. A person has to say the following three things in his household shortly before Shabbos begins, before Shkia. Isauten, ask them, did you take Meiser from the fruit that we're going to eat on, from the fruit and the produce and whatever that we're going to eat on Shabbos? Because you can't take Meiser on Shabbos. A Ravten, have you made the Eruv Chatzeres, like we've been learning about in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, or whatever other kind of Eruvin have to be made before Shabbos? And have Likuos and Ner, and light the Shabbos candles. Mephoshim, by the way, explain why the first two are phrased as questions and the third one as a statement, because the first two, you can't be sure. You can't look around and see whether Meister has been taken or whether the Eruv has been made. But you can look and see the Shabbos candles are lit or not. So he sees they're not lit, so he tells them, have liquorice in there. Anyway, the point is, says Rabbi Bamachana, even though the Mishnah is saying that he has to say them, and that could mean that he says them very strongly and sharply, nevertheless, no, he has to say them gently. This way they'll accept it from him, and this way they'll listen to what he says. Omer of Ashi said, "Of Ashi says, I didn't hear the statement of Rav Baba Chana, v'kiyamti misvara, but I kept it from svara. I realized on my own that this is the correct thing to do. Now, what does that mean? Rav Baba Chana is also saying based on svara. So Marsha explains like this. What Rabbi Baba Chana is saying is that you should say it gently so that they're going to listen, because Otherwise, they're not going to listen. They're not going to want to do it. And then you're going to have problems on Shabbos. And furthermore, also, you have to have, Maharsha points out, each of these things, they have to do as his shliach. So now, for the meiser, the produce belongs to him. If they're not his shluchim to take the truma and meiser, then they're not allowed to do it, lahalacha. So therefore, it has to be that they accept it, are willing to do it. Otherwise, if they just go and do it on their own, it's not valid truma and meiser. And the same thing with the eruv. So now, though, the point is that, so Rav Abba is saying you have to say it gently so that they'll be willing to be your shluchim, but Rav Ashi is adding to that. What if the balabas is so choshuv that automatically they're going to listen to what he has to say anyway, whether they like it or not? That was Rav Ashi's situation. He's the Rabban Shal Kol Yisrael in his times. So he's saying, even in my case, where no matter what I say, they're going to accept it, whether they like it or not, nevertheless, v'kiyam tiyam misvara, I'm still saying misvara, that a Talmid Chacham should be speaking, benachas and abrias, should be speaking gently rather than harshly to people. So the Gemara continues. Here's another angle on it. A person should not put Eima Yaseira in his house. Because we find that a great Talmid Chacham, a great person, one time caused too much Eima in his house. The people were too afraid of his reaction if they tell him that things weren't done right. And the result was they caused him to eat a great thing, a great kind of isser. So first of all, who was this Adam Gadol? Umanu. So who was that? Rab Chananya Uchanina ben Gamliel. So the Dover Gadol, the Gemara is going to explain, means Eva Menachai. What happened was one time they had some meat prepared, but then one limb of it went missing, and they were afraid of his reaction. So they took an Eva from the nearest animal that they could find and put it in there, and then pretended as though it was part of the original animal. And he ended up, so the Gemara is saying they caused him to eat Eva Menachai. So the Gemara says, "Hey, chilu sakadaydach." What do you mean they actually caused him to eat it? So you mean the Eibishter actually allowed it to happen that he ate this Eva Menachai? Hashta behemtan shal tzaddikim. Consider by a kal v'chomer, even the animals of tzaddikim. Hashem doesn't cause something wrong to happen through them, as we have the famous story with Pinchas ben Yair and his donkey, where his donkey wouldn't eat grain that wasn't misered. Tzadikim atzmon lekol shekein, how much more so tzadikim, that Hashem protects them and saves them from eating a dvar iser. Tosfos here and in a number of other places in Shas brings up the point. We do find other gemaras where we see that a Talmid Chacham did end up doing something wrong. So Tosfos answers that it's different when we're talking about something of eating. First of all, this rule that Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu maybe Takol Al Yodam is limited, Tosfos says, to matters of eating. It's a gnai for a tzaddik that he should eat the dvar iser, and it's easy to understand that based on the Alter Rebbe points out in Tanya that food becomes damu basar kibsarei, and therefore the ma'acholos asuras, the person needs chibur takever and everything to get rid of the effects of it. Because it becomes damu basar kibsarei, so it's a gnai that a tzaddik's body should be made up of dvarim hasurim. So therefore, the Eibishter will give a tzaddik special protection to avoid that, but not necessarily other kinds of isurim. Second of all, also Tosfos points out, this rule applies only where the food itself is intrinsically osur. Now let's say, for example, you have an example that Tosfos brings from Gemara Psachim, where Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Abba one time mistakenly ate something before Havdalah. That's a time when it's osur, but the food itself is not intrinsically osur. So it's not like it was nevelus or trefus or chelev or dam or anything like that. Okay, in any case, so the point is, here we're talking about something which is definitely a dvar iser of eating. So how could it be that Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel actually ended up eating it? Ela bikshu la'achilu dover gadol. Rather, what it means is, they were going to give him a dover gadol. Namely, Eiv Menachai, like we said, because they were afraid of his reaction when some of the meat was missing. But in the end, the Eibishter brought about for somehow or other that he didn't end up eating it. Why are we calling it Dover Godel? Tosfos explains, because after all, it's the only Isra Achila that applies even to Bnei Noach. All the other things that we Jews are also to eat are perfectly allowed for Bnei Noach. Only Eva Menachai is not. Therefore, we call it a Dover Godel. Ben Yehoyada also mentions a point, because unlike most Isurim, where there's only a lav involved, here there's a lav and an esse, because there's also an esse not to eat meat. There's an esse to only eat meat from animals that were shechted, implying from that we derive, therefore don't eat from ones that were not shechted. So therefore, implicitly, when a person eats from meat that was not from a shchuta, then he's also over on that. And so therefore, if he had eaten it, he would have been over on an esse and a lois esse, and therefore, for that reason, it calls it davar gadol. But again, the point is, all of this was because he was matal emi yisera b'seich beisei, and had he not done that, then there wouldn't have been a problem. So that teaches us the danger of doing that kind of thing. So the Gemara goes on. So now, we talked about before about this point that when you're writing words from a pasuk, you have to do sirtut. You have to score lines on the paper or the parchment before you write the words from the pasuk. So the Gemara gives another example of that. Sholach le ma'ukva le Rabbi Lazar. Ma'ukva sent the following message to Rabbi Lazar. Ma'ukva was in Babel, Rabbi Lazar is in Eretz Yisrael. Bnei Adam ha'umdim alai. People who are standing up against me and harassing me, l'chara for the God, if Rashi says, they're cursing and blaspheming and harassing me, over yodi l'moistrim l'malchus. I have the ability to give them to hand them over to the government, to say malshinos on them. Ma'ukva was the Reish Galusa, so he had connections with the government. Mahu, what is the din? Am I allowed to do that? Now, Masira is a pretty serious thing. He's not going to stam do it just because the guy's calling him names or something. We obviously have to understand that it was a really bad situation. And Bapashtras, Ma'ukva doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be Moisir and Lamalchus to get killed or something. Just that maybe he'll get fined or something, you know, he'll get a ticket or something to put it in modern terms, and that'll scare him off. Sholach sirtit for Kosovle. Rabbi Lozer did sirtut on a piece of parchment and then wrote back to him the following pasuk from Tillim. Amarti, I've said to myself, says David, Eshmer adrochai, I will guard my ways, mechatoi b'loshoni, that I shouldn't sin with my tongue to say loshon hara or other things against other people. Eshmer alafim machzim, I'll put a barrier for my mouth, ba'oid rosha lenegdi, as long as the rosha is opposite me. Meaning, explains Rabbi Lazar, af bisha rosha lenegdi, even though the rosha is standing up against me, Eshmer alafim machzim, nevertheless, I'm going to put a barrier in front of my mouth and not talk against him, even when I have the opportunity, like you do, Ma'ukva, to master him to the government. So what Marsha says, in other words, the vote is, even when he's the negdi, and he's cursing me to my face, and it's very hard to hold myself back, nevertheless, I'm going to keep that barrier over there. So then Ma'ukva sends back a message, Kometzari Lituva, these people, it was actually one person, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, are causing me a lot of tsar, v'loy matzino, ye'ekum buhu, I can't stand it anymore. So Rabbi Lazar sent him another message with another pasuk from Tillim. Doim Lashem, be silent for Hashem, v'ischoilaloi, and v'ischoilal for him. The simple meaning of v'ischoilal is meloshen yochil and other words like that. That means to hope for. So be quiet for Hashem and hope for him, and Hashem will take care of things in meloshen techeles, and Hashem will take care of things in his own good time. But here, Rabbi Lazar is explaining, Doim loy Lashem, you be silent for Hashem. You don't say Lashon Hara about him and go Maser on him. And Tosfos also points out the word Doim is also related to Dimdume, as the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that you're supposed to daven Shachris and Mincha im Dimdume Chama as the sun is rising or setting respectively. So it means you daven at the proper times, and other than that, you be silent and don't go and Maser on him. And what is the v'hischolol means v'hu yapilim lefanecha lo lecha chalolim chalolim. Hashem will make it that they will fall in front of you as corpses, as dead bodies. So in other words, the word v'hischolol has several meanings. It means chalolim. It's also meloshin. It's also meloshin. It's also meloshin tefila, like Tosfos says. Meloshin. So Tosfos says that the doim is referring to tefila. Marsha points out the word v'hischolol is also related to tefila. Vayichal. That a person should daven only when his mind is clear and in a frame of mind to be pleading with the Eibishter. So therefore says, Rabbi Lazar explains to him, Hashkin b'hadav aleim l'beis medrash, you get up early in the morning and stay late in the evening in the beis medrash, learning Torah and davening, and don't worry about him. V'heim, call him aleim, and Hashem will cause those people to disappear on their own. True enough, Hadover Yotzim appear Rabbi Lazar. No sooner had Rabbi Lazar said this, than Asnuhu L'Gniva B'Koilo. And Gniva was put into chains by the government. They arrested him on some charge, not the Ma'ukva, and that it had nothing to do with it, except for the fact that it was Min HaShemayim in order to save Ma'ukva. We find in a few other places in this Masechta, and sporadically in other places in Shas, Gniva was actually a great Talmud Chacham. He was a Talmud of Rav. We even have a few places in Shas, we have halachas that he said in the name of Rav. However, as we see from this Gemara, and from a few other Gemaras later on in this Masechta, he was also a very, he was a Baal Machloikas, a very quarrelsome person. And so we see for whatever reason he was starting up with Ma'ukva over here, and the end is that he got arrested by the government. Much later in the Masechta, it tells how eventually, unfortunately, he was taken out to be executed.
You allowed to ask questions?
What?
How does it work here? You allowed to ask questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
Why aren't you worried that he could actually physically hurt somebody? He's such a wild, nasty person.
So obviously we have to
take him out before I can do that.
Well, if there's a concern that he's a roidif, yes, obviously we have to understand that in this case it was only verbal harassment, like Rashi says, mechadif from a gadif, and it wasn't going beyond that. So therefore, no. If there was any concern that it would go beyond that, then that's different. But in this case, obviously the situation was that there was no concern of that. The question was just that he was harassing Ma'ukva so much.
You don't want to wait until he does something.
But nevertheless, you can tell with a person whether he's likely to escalate to that or not. Keep in mind, I mean, you know, this must have been going on over some time before my Ukva is even bothered enough to even ask about it. And the time it would also take for letters to go back and forth between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael must have taken some significant amount of time. If in all that time, Gniva has not escalated it to actual physical violence, then we have very little reason to think that he will. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula. So Yud Beis Adar Aleph. So the Mishnah at the end of Masechta Sota, we'll get to it in a couple of months, Bez Hashem, talks about the period of Ikvas de Mashicha, and the Gemara says every day Meruba Kilolosim Mishal Chaveira. Every day's Klala is worse than the previous one. Now we have to ask, the Rebbe says, why does the Torah want to tell us about such a negative thing that's going to be the Ikvas Mashicha? What, we don't have enough trouble of the Tzoris that we already have now that we're going to have to worry about? A Yid should have to worry about that it's going to be like that? So the answer is just the opposite. It means that every yid should be working to should be preparing to be mevatel that inyan built yiratzvi, this negative thing, by adding in things of kedusha. So that way, in other words, when a yid hears this idea, b'chol yamim kilosim rubam shachaveri, on the contrary, that motivates him to go to a higher level. So there shouldn't be that yirida, and on the contrary, he should counteract it with a greater aliyah. Continuing on halachas of Erev Chatzeres. If a yid lives together with one goy in a chotzer, an apartment building, or in a whatever, then there's no iser. Then you don't need an eid of chatzeres, and you don't need chiras or shus or anything. The yid is allowed to freely carry in the chotzer and between the chotzer and the house and so forth. That applies also if it's two Jews and one goy, as long as if it's a situation where the two Jews don't require an eid for any of the reasons that we discussed before, such as that they eat together. But if you have two Jews who require an Eruv between them, and then you have one Goy on the property as well, then he would answer for them. Now, they also can't make an Eruv. Then they need what's called Schiras Rishus. And if you have two independent Goyish families or more, then you need Schiras Rishus from each one individually. So in the following Sifim, he talks about the details of it, but basically the idea of Schiras Rishus is you're symbolically renting the premises from the Goy, so that now he's not considered to be an actual balabas over there, but rather just an Oirach, and therefore he's not answering without that. Now, when you have only one Goy, the Gemara explains, in general, one Jew doesn't usually live with one Goy because he's concerned that the Goy may harm him, but once you have two or more, then there's a concern. The Chachamim also don't want Jews living in close proximity to Goyim, and Schiras Rishus isn't always that easy to arrange, so that way they're more likely to want to live in an old Jewish building. But if it happens, or like when you have a neighborhood Eruv where there are Goyim, then you have to arrange Schiras Rishus, and we'll learn in the following Sifim how that's done exactly. That's the same.